This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meetin' 3, we head into the second part of our mini-series on global trade, where we talk about all things sweet, from chocolate and sugarcane to the cultural festival that accompanied the growth of the date industry in the U.S.
They're using this romance and fantasy to say, dates are exotic and you should consume them.
I like to think of the food that we eat as archaeological artifacts, in part because the history of humanity is in the stands in your produce market.
It's not like other foods. We have very, like, personal feelings about chocolate.
Tune in to Meetin' 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I tried to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Atsushi Numata, who is the chef and owner of Ni Japanese Deli at Essex Market in the Lower East Side, Manhattan. Ni Japanese Deli is unique because all the food he sells is very healthy and allergen-free. He opened the deli in 2012, inspired by his newborn baby who suffered from a lot of allergies. So today we'll discuss Atsushi's intriguing childhood of growing up in a restaurant family, how his music career shifted to cooking, how he makes delicious, allergen-free dishes, and much, much more. But before you start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start our conversation with Atsushi Numata. Hello, Atsushi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello. Nice to meet you, finally.
Yes. Yeah, this is a Zoom world. We exchanged a lot of email beforehand and we never met each other.
Right.
But yeah, but you have a great reputation. Yeah. So first of all, where are you from and what did you eat? Yeah, go ahead. I'd love to hear what you want to say.
Yeah, I'm originally from Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And what I used to eat. Well, mostly my mother's cooking. Mm. But, you know, her parents used to own Ryote, which is like an exclusive restaurant. You know, you get to have a private room and, you know, high-end stuff. So
right.
She was really good at the cooking.
Mm.
So, and as I was growing up, you know, there was not much Western food yet, like now in Japan. But she tried. So she, you know, she tried a lot of Italian recipes and, you know, Western cuisine. So I was very fortunate to have, you know, parents. And my dad also liked to eat out. So as a kid, he took me to the different restaurants and, you know, my experience started there.
Right. So that makes sense that you're in the food business. And for listeners who are not familiar with Ryote is it's a restaurant, like Atsushi said. It's very formal, and it's used often for corporate dining out, like meetings and gatherings, or very formal dinners.
And, many politicians and the businessmen.
That is so true. Right. Yeah, so, yeah, that's really amazing that your grandparents had that very authentic high-end restaurant.
Yes.
Right. So when and why did you come to New York?
I came to New York in 88, late 88, and, you know, my goal was, I've been always playing music, so I wanted to play music here. You know, I always interested in music coming from New York, so I just wanted to experience the scene and also play it in there, so.
Right. So, and I heard that you had worked as a DJ, so could you tell us about your career as a DJ?
Immediately, I got hooked up with promoters running parties, you know, around the downtown New York area. So, you know, back then, they didn't find many Japanese DJs. So I guess, you know, I caught their eyes. And so I started playing around the downtown New York, you know, mostly clubs. And yeah.
Right. So, like, was that the time, like, Japanese music is kind of, like, funky and edgy and cool in downtown?
Yeah, the downtown New York scene was amazing. You know, like, it was, like, in the middle of the hip-hop scene, so a lot of hip-hop DJ came out around then, and so it was so inspiring and fun.
Wow. By the way, how did you study music? You just listen to and you study?
No, my dad played little bit of jazz guitar, so I had access to the, you know, instrumentals, you know, guitars and pianos, and, you know, and I grew up around the, you know, musical instruments, and also I like to listen to records and stuff, you know, my dad had, and then I started buying my own music. So I didn't really formally study music, but I was in a band, you know, during the high school days, so right. Self-studied, I guess.
And do you still DJ sometimes?
I do, but yeah, but not not around this time, you know, all the clubs are closed. So yeah, unfortunately, I'm just playing music for my kids at house.
Right. Well, that sounds great.
It's the best.
Right. So, and I heard that you had cooked professionally before opening Ni Japanese Deli. So yes. Where did you work, and what were your responsibility at those places?
All my high school job was, you know, in the kitchen. So I started young. But in New York, first job was Samurai Mama, noodle shop in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Right. So, well, just to listeners, that Samurai Mama is really amazing because we had the owner, Chef Makoto Suzuki, earlier, like maybe many, many episodes ago. But he's really the foundation.
He was in the show, I didn't know.
Yeah, he was. Okay. He's an evangelist of Brooklyn Japanese dining scene. So, yeah, he's just amazing. And this, the Samurai Mama is still there. It's very classic and good ambience and relaxing place with good food. So, yeah, I didn't know that you worked there.
Right. I was in the beginning, right before they're opening up. So, we came up with a lot of recipes together. And, you know, the broth and dashi and noodles by itself. And, yeah.
Right, so they serve a lot of udon and wheat-based thick noodles, just classic Japanese udon noodles,
right?
And among everything else. So, yeah. Okay. And so, by the way, when you started working in Japan at high school, did you work at your grandparents' restaurant or?
Yes, during the summertime, I have two other brothers. So during the summer break, they used to send us out to Osaka, which my mother's originally from. So basically our babysitter was like one of the, you know, prep cook. So he used to, so he used to make us, you know, help him, you know, prepping vegetables and, you know, taking off the, you know, unnecessary part from the vegetables and, you know, stuff like that, like seasonal stuff during the summertime. And we used to go to the mountains, get some mountain vegetables and, you know, yomogi, mugwort, and stuff, and so.
Wow, that's
like
very
authentic. I started young, yeah.
Yeah, because it's usually high school kitchen jobs, it's like washing dishes at casual, right, you know, izakaya or something like that, but you worked at the real thing, so.
Well, I started as a server, and then I got along with the kitchen people, I don't know why, but, and they're like, oh, you should work in the kitchen, and it's like, okay.
Wow, so the destiny is determined back then already.
I guess so.
Right. Okay, so, and then you also worked at the American restaurant in New York called the General Green in
General
Brooklyn?
Also in Brooklyn, yes.
Right. Those had a really great reputation, so what did you learn?
Unfortunately, I knew the chef before, and he was on his way out, so he was looking for somebody, taking charge after him. So I got in there, and I had an experience with Italian and Chinese before. So yeah, during my high school days. So, it was quite an experience, and I loved it. You know, like it was a really busy restaurant, and I really liked the commotion. You know, in the kitchen, you know, it's like a battle zone.
Right, the energy.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm curious though, like, you know, when you cook in ryote in Japan, is that a different ambience than, you know, cooking in an American restaurant in New York?
Yeah, American restaurant is much more, you know, a lot of screaming are going on. And like I said, it's like just like a battle zone, you know. But I really like the energy.
Right. So that's a unique experience. And do you think it was a different experience that's now valuable?
Yeah, it's definitely different because, you know, Japanese cooking, as you know, it doesn't require much of firepower. But Western cuisine is, you know, all about firepower and the temperature. And, you know, so, and, you know, a lot of stuff is, you know, made on the spot. You know, like Japanese cooking, like you need to do a lot of preparation. But you know, the restaurant I worked there, it's like you have to make a lot of stuff on the spot. So,
right, like steak or burger, meat,
steak. Right. Yeah, especially steak. Yeah, I learned a lot about, you know, temperature for the steaks and the burgers.
Right. Yeah, I always wonder how you know, like, steak is so personal, and I cannot make myself perfect steak at the level of
people still gonna complain. no matter how perfect you cook it, but it's just, you know, you have to cook hundreds of them, you know, to get the right temperature, and they are very patient, you know, with me learning stuff. So that's great.
Right. Oh, it's such an achievement because the General Green, unfortunately, is closed, I think, permanently. But it's a really well reputable restaurant. So, wow. Congratulations. I guess
so, yeah. Oh, thank you.
So
it looks good on my resume.
Yeah, it's really unique, right? Usually, in Japanese chefs in New York, they don't have that, like, the real authentic new American restaurant. Like, you know, like, authentic meaning, like, quote, end quote. But yeah, that's great. So, and you opened a new Japanese deli in 2012 in historic Essex Market in the Lower East Side, Manhattan. So why did you open the Japanese deli there?
Working for people, the restaurant people, you know, just takes a lot of my time. And I just had a newborn, so I wanted to participate in raising her. So I needed more flexible schedule, you know, for my days. So, and my wife back then stumbled across the Essex Market. She got me friends with one of the vendor, and she was told that there's going to be opening. So we just jumped on that, you know, occasion.
Right. So this Essex Street, Essex Market in Lower East Side, it's really historic. We're going to talk about it in a moment. But it's just amazing to be a part of it. You must have been really proud to be a part of the Essex Market.
Back then, I didn't feel that way. But yeah, because we just moved, you know, like 2 years ago. So the older location was really, I mean, I loved it, you know, but how should I describe it? It was really old because it was like almost 80 years old market. But it kind of reminded me of the Tsukiji Market in Japan.
Before they moved to Toyosu, right?
Right. So I really liked it, but you know, a lot of people thought, you know, they are scared to try our food, you know, because building looks so old and so.
It's almost
now
like
it's great.
It's a very nostalgic place, but I understand it's almost like going to a museum or something, like a preserved area of the museum. So what is the concept of a new Japanese deli?
Well, like you said, my daughter was born with, you know, a lot of allergies, so, and it was almost impossible for her to eat Japanese food because she was allergic to wheat.
Mm.
And soy sauce is, you know, basically made with soy and wheat. So,
right.
You know, but fortunately, there's a tamari with soy sauce without wheat. So we had to find many condiments and spices and other stuff for Japanese cooking. We start looking for allergen-free condiments and stuff. So.
Right.
So gluten-free, allergen-free, and also, you know, we try to have a lot of vegan option.
Mm.
And so that was the concept. And
right.
Also,
so,
yeah, sorry. Mm. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's a healthy option who's sensitive to food and like clean, healthier. That's the idea.
Yeah,
like.
I guess so, yeah.
Right. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I think we are the one of the first restaurants, you know, start doing gluten-free cooking.
Right. Yeah. So what does ni mean?
Ni simply means my ex-wife loved the character, the hiragana ni, Japanese character. But later on, people ask us, you know, where does it come from? So we just came up with... when you write New York and Japan, Nippon, so it starts with ni. So we said New York, Nippon.
Right. Well, why did you like that? You both like the hiragana, that's the character letters.
It consists three lines. So somehow, you know, we just had a new family. You know, my firstborn was just born. So three lines signified each of us.
Interesting.
So, I don't know.
Right.
My ex-wife was an artist, so she has her own vision.
Right. And the ni is like, you know, when you smile, say niko niko in Japanese. So it's some
right.
To remind me of that smiley face.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So, by the way, for those who, which mentioned earlier, but listeners who are not familiar with Essex Market, what is it? Maybe you can tell me.
Essex Market is one of the first public market in New York City. And it opened in 1940. And, you know, main purpose was then was like there were so many street vendors, you know, like in the Lower East Side, there's a lot of different groups of immigrants.
Mm.
So they used to do street vendors, you know, selling vegetables and, you know, the takeout food or whatever. So instead of having vendors, you know, scattering around the city, around the streets, they thought, okay, so we're going to have this public market, so somehow we can control and organize our street vendors. So that's how it began. And there's so many then, but not many of the markets survived. I think there's only three public markets exist in New York City right now, one in Uptown and Brooklyn and Lower East Side. So Essex Market is one of them.
Right. Yeah. And will they keep like change the form? And I heard even like, originally opened in 1818, about 20 years ago. And it's like really open air. There's no roof.
Right.
So it's a very primitive form. And
right.
I can't believe that it's still going. And then last year, May 2019, the market moved to the new location across the street, which
across
is like shiny, beautiful space.
Yeah.
Right. So you must be very happy to be in the new place.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We are happy. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so how do you... connect with other people and the vendors. It's this, because the market is a community, right? The Essex Market itself?
Yes. Well, basically, you know, all the vendors is family owned. So a lot of family members involving. So, you know, we had a newborn and we used to take her to the market too. So they kind of embraced us, you know, instantly.
Mm.
You know, and they tried to, you know, tell us how to raise a kid and everything. So, yeah. And so it was, instant connection, you know.
Mm.
And
Right. Yeah. So you got the whole village to raise a kid.
Yes. So right. my daughter's first word is Spanish.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, because a lot of Spanish-speaking, speaking people were there, and, a lot of them don't even speak English, so they used to talk to her in Spanish, and her first word was agua.
Oh, water.
Yeah.
Wow. So, well, by the way, the Essex market occupants kept changing based on immigration history.
Yes.
And now it's really reflecting more diversity of New York City. And they
right.
now even have a Japanese vendor. So
yes.
it's such a celebration of immigration culture in this whole city and I would say country.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll discover what healthy dishes Atsushi offers at Ni Japanese Deli. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, and my guest today is Atsushi Nomata, who is the chef and owner of Ni Japanese Deli at the Essex Market in Lower East Side, Manhattan. So, what kind of dishes are on the menu at the Ni Japanese Deli?
Okay, so it's basically, it's vegan sozai base. Sozai is like a small dishes, you combine with other main dishes and stuff like that, so... we wanted to have takeouts for the small dishes in the package, so you can pick and choose different packages and to make your own dinner or lunch. And also we started doing a bento box, which is like a lunch box, consists of rice and different kind of small dishes, and also protein options. We do fish and tofu based main dish, and also we also do noodles and sushi, just like any other Japanese restaurant in New York, because there's always demand for it. And basic Japanese stuff. And even though we're doing a lot of vegan option and allergen free dishes, but I still think it's somewhat traditional, even though we're using a lot of ingredients from the local ingredients. I go to the green market at the Union Square and get some fresh vegetables. Doesn't even consider Japanese ingredients, but somehow I make it to Japanese food. And also, Essex Market has a grocery stores, and mostly from South America, so they have a lot of interesting ingredients, you know, like yams and the different kinds of potatoes and even the condiments and, you know, so many different kinds of chili peppers. So I combine them all together, and the summer, I still feel like it's traditional. Because I don't like the word fusion. People like to call us fusion or whatever. But
right. Well, I think that the essence of Japanese cuisine is just based on simple ingredients, and what you do with it is just, the approach is not to mess with it. You just try to make the most of the flavor regardless of what you use. So maybe you are developing a new style of Japanese food here in New York.
Exactly, yeah. Just local, fresh local ingredients and complement them, you know, to Japanese flavor.
Right. And I looked at the menu on the website of New Japanese Deli, and I saw delicious looking photos. And I got hungry, and I felt super nostalgic to recall. Yeah, like it's my mother's home cooking, and you don't see that very often in New York.
Right.
So,
So that was another thing why we wanted to do more sozai stuff, you know, like home cooking.
Mm.
And also it's a family-owned business, so that's our style.
The sozai is not well-known, well, often heard in this country, but sozai is, like you said, main dish and other balancing, dishes that complement the main dish, as well as you get nourished by eating all different kinds of vegetables. Sometimes it's cooked, sometimes it's pickles.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that's another reason that Japanese cuisine is known as being healthy, because of the existence of this sozai dishes.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. They make you eat a lot more vegetables.
Right. So what are some of the sozai dishes that you have, for example, so that the listeners can understand what they are?
Yeah, we have usual suspect like, you know, hijiki, which is seaweed simmered with broth and carrots and different kind of vegetables. You know, we use chickpeas instead of soybeans.
Okay.
And also kimpira, it's like a stir-fried root vegetables. We also use lotus root for it. Like a little bit spicy, sweet, spicy, stir-fried, you know, traditional stuff.
Right.
And also we do like, what we do is like a nimono, which is like simmered vegetables with seasonal vegetables, you know, like different season had a different kind of vegetables. So we use that for occasions and...
So by the way, the sozai dishes are perfect for a simple bowl of white rice, because I mean, outside Japan, people really don't appreciate the whole, you know, perfect bowl of white rice. What it means is it's special, you know, species of rice, and it's shiny and nicely sticky, fluffy, and by itself you can eat one satisfying meal. And then those saltiness and sweetness goes really well with the white rice. So that's the essence of Japanese food, I think.
Yes, yeah, I agree. You know, a lot of rice involving. And
right.
Yes, I think the main goal is how much rice you can eat with these different dishes.
Right, to me, it's just similar to Italian food, right? But if you go to Italy, you don't have a whole plate of pasta. It's like, you know, a few bites, but it enhances the ingredients on top. So, that's the same idea of Japanese white rice. You don't have many bowls. It's just one perfect bowl of white rice, and it goes with other things as kind of the center stage. And based on the white rice, you pick different kind of dishes, the sozai, and then you get satisfied.
Yes.
Because you don't keep eating the same dish. That gives you some moments to satisfy. So that timing actually sends that the signals to your brain, you're getting satisfied. So it's called hara hachibunme. It's like 80% full. It's perfect for your health. So that's one of the foundations of Japanese cuisine.
Which is the hardest thing to do, but you cannot really limit yourself to 80%, but
But yeah, I saw, like, for example, I was looking at the menu, like zuke tuna don, on your menu. So zuke tuna don is the white cold tuna loin slices marinated in sweet soy sauce and mixed, and the baby arugula, avocado, nori seaweed, toasted white sesame over brown rice, and also available in spicy tuna. I can eat the whole thing like 3 times a day. So, yeah, and the pictures are great on your website. So
thank you.
It's amazing.
Thanks to our friend Ken who took the pictures.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Japanese food is known as very healthy, as we just briefly discussed now. But how difficult is it to make it allergen-free?
Well, finding alternative condiments was the hardest part. But then again, it's not going to be the same as using the regular condiments to make a traditional dishes. So we had to do a lot of experiment. But in the beginning, it wasn't so busy. So, you know, we had a lot of time to experiment there. So it was fun at the same time. So,
right. So, for example, the condiment you said earlier, like soy sauce, not the regular soy sauce, but tamari, which is basically gluten-free soy sauce,
Which is originally soy sauce too.
Right.
Tamari was originally the first one, right? Yeah.
Right. And if you go to Kyoto Kaiseki, they have like different soy sauce served at different dishes. So,
It's kind of like a salt, you know, like when you say salt, all the salt tastes different. So all the soy sauce tastes different too. So like in order to, you know, you set up the goal to make,
right,
you know, let's say kimpira. So which one is the best soy sauce, you know?
That makes a big difference, actually. Yeah, many people have different salts at home, like 2 to 3. I have like 5 different salts, and it really makes a big difference.
Yes.
Right. So other than soy sauce, do you have any specific condiments or the ingredients that you use often to make it allergen-free?
Yes, so we make our own broth, vegan Japanese broth, you know, like with kelp, kombu, and among the other stuff. Sometimes we use mushroom and root vegetable to make a broth, so... So that's based on that. So we make our own ponzu and also like different kind of sauce, you know, for the different dishes.
Right. Well, sometimes the substitute can be tastier. Like, for example, I like Van Leeuwen's ice cream, and I actually prefer the vegan vanilla than regular vanilla. It's just somehow it tastes better. I think nut based. So
okay, yeah, cashews, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So do you have any anything that you think is more successful than regular dishes?
Yes, our vegan broth is really good. You know, I think it's almost same as fish based broth.
Yeah. Right. So talking about using kombu dashi.
Yeah, not only kombu, but we use mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, and different kind of root vegetables. Depends on the season. You know, sometimes we use daikon and
Right. So people started to use word dashi, but dashi basically, in general, I think most Japanese family restaurants use the combination of kombu and bonito flakes, but you don't use bonito flakes. Bonito flakes
wanted to keep it the basics as, you know, vegan. So even though we sell fish and stuff, but, you know, vegan or vegetarian people comes, you know, they can have anything here, you know, without fish or, you know.
And by mixing with the dried shiitake mushrooms, so basically dashi is the balm of umami. And if you combine different types of umami, amino acids, kombu and shiitake, they're very different. And they have synergy. So it's not just adding two different tasty elements, but they multiply if you combine them. So yeah, like I can imagine your dashi stock based on kombu and shiitake mushroom must be really delicious. So one day I have to come and taste
that. Please do. Yes, please.
Do you sell it by as a soup? Or like, you know...
Yes, we do miso soup and also we do noodle dishes. So it comes with broth.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sounds great. And you have many different dishes, like udon. You have udon too?
Yes.
Udon dishes so, too, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like my homage to Samurai Mama.
Right. I also wanted to ask about, you know, you have different onigiri. Rice balls. So what's the relevance of onigiri in Japanese food culture?
I think it's... Onigiri was like when you travel, something you carried with. So during your journey, you can have a lunch break or whatever, you know. It's like easy to carry. It's a, you know, bowl of rice with different kind of ingredients.
Right.
So, but I guess now it kind of become like a snack. Because if you go to convenience store in Japan, you know, they have like so many different kinds of onigiri, rice ball.
Right.
So I don't know if they still do. I don't know. You know, Japanese mothers still make onigiri for their kids' lunch, but. I think originally.
Yeah. I think it's onigiri. It's just a simple rice balls and it can be different. Just only simple white rice with salt to something like you make. Your signature onigiri is multigrain rice and black sesame and pickled plum. That sounds amazing. And you have a kelp or kale, white sesame, and jalapeno miso. That's creative. And white sesame and spicy tuna or salmon. So. Yeah, so I think the onigiri, basically people think of onigiri as it's a symbolic food of love, of mother's love, because it's you make with both hands and you can put your love into the rice bowl. That's like a Japanese mindset. So selling those special rice bowls at your place, I think it's a good kind of communication of Japanese culture. To your customers.
It got so much popular now, but when we started it, it's still kind of new to the, you know, people in New York, I guess. So a lot of people used to ask us a lot of questions. So.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But I think it's something to do with Shinto too, I don't know. I heard something about this. The triangle signifies something in Shinto, so I don't know.
Oh, really? Oh, I have to look up. Yeah. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Huh, interesting. Maybe shape of shrine or something like that.
I guess, yeah. Or three different gods or whatever.
Interesting. I'll look up.
Yeah.
And also, so based on what you serve, and I mean, you say you're becoming more popular, but who are your customers at the New Japanese Deli?
Mostly local people, you know, the people lives in Lower East Side, East Village. But, you know, basically all, at the same time, it's all city too. You know, people come from Brooklyn and, you know, they have a job in downtown and their subway station is nearby. And, you know, they just drop in and buy some grocery. And at the same time, they pick up, you know, rice balls or whatever we have.
Mm.
So, right. It's, but mostly local people, you know.
Right. Are they looking for allergy-free food or not healthy?
Too. Yeah, lots of we have a lot of gluten-free customers too. So that's really, you know, good.
Right. I'm curious though. Are there more people looking for, you know, allergen-free, gluten-free food?
Yes. I think, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't find many people with allergy, but now there's so many, you know.
Mm.
So I guess, I don't know.
I think there are two ways. Like people get more educated, like, oh, maybe I have an allergy. And also, actually, we're contaminated by all those chemicals surrounding us.
Yeah, I think it's both ways. Yeah, but, you know, when I was a kid, you know, like, oh, I got a stomachache, and they're like, oh, drink some water.
Yeah, that's true.
So they didn't really care, you know. But now I guess, you know, I'm getting sick, so maybe we eat something else. And,
right.
Yeah, I guess people, yeah, are more conscious. People are more conscious to what, you know, they're taking. I guess.
Right. Well, we tend to forget the natural recovery capacity of our body, but nowadays I think all the chemicals are overwhelming us. So yes. I think a place like New Japanese Deli is becoming more important.
That's another thing I was finding out, because I wasn't much conscious of it, you know, before, because, you know, maybe I was young and so I didn't care what I really eat. But as long as you're eating like Japanese food, and you don't really get sick, you know, and if you follow, even if you follow like seasonal stuff, that's really good too. Like it's really like perfectly designed, you know, because during the winter time you eat more root vegetables and, you know, like gobo, and, you know, like it really cures, you know, cold and, you know, and some of the stuff killing germs, you know, like pickled plums, you know. So it's like almost like natural healing.
Right, and also heard that summertime your body is more capable of digesting sugar from fruits, so that if you have an insulin problem, then it is better to eat sweet stuff in the summer. Right. So how old is your daughter now, and how does she like the food at New Japanese Deli?
She's 11 now, and yeah, she loves it. You know, she grew up on it, and even though she thinks she's American, but I guess it's in DNA, so she appreciates it. She likes natto and stuff too.
Yeah, and tell us about natto. It's just becoming more keywords nowadays. I hear often about natto.
It's basically fermented soybeans, but it helps digestion, and, you know, as well as it's very nutritious. But it's got the intense aroma to some people. So my mother, she didn't even like it. You know, she's from the West, so a lot of people from Osaka, they hated natto.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, it's like, actually, my father was from the South, Southern Japan, and he, for some reason, he hated it. So I've never seen real natto until I became an adult. Yeah. It was banned from my family.
Oh, okay. Did you like it then?
Well, I really haven't seen it, like even touched it. And maybe like 5 years ago, I started to eat natto, and now I feel amazing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we had a guest about, you know, natto producer guest in the past, but recently I started to try, there are two types of natto, like whole natto. The other one is a hikibari natto.
Yeah.
So hikibari is, they are peeled. So that there's no skin, and they cut into small pieces, and they don't have much smell, as that could be offensive to some, you know, beginners of natto.
Really? I didn't know.
I didn't know that either. So, and it's highly digestive because there's no skin, you know, the soy skin.
Right.
So it's believed to be better for small infants or kids or elderly.
Okay.
Right, so... Yeah, and also the natto is amazing for the fact that it contains a very bioavailable vitamin K2, which is, you know, K1 is everywhere, but K2 is very hard to get. So it helps to, you know, bone density increase and all those things. So natto is amazing. And also, first time I smelled it, I was so scared because my dad said, well, don't eat it. But... Oh, wow. It's a smell. It depends on the brand. Some brands are very strong, but what I tried was there's some coffee notes to my nose. And I looked up. So there is a chemical called the pyrazin. And the pyrazin is included in actually coffee and chocolate. Okay. So, yeah, I happened to find that pleasant smelling natto for my first time. So. Yeah. Anyways, I carried away about natto.
Well, yeah, I guess depending on people's palate, but a lot more people buy natto now.
Yeah,
non-Japanese people. Yeah.
Right, and the health benefits is really tremendous.
Right.
Right. So do you sell natto?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because besides takeout food, we also carry some condiments and the grocery. So we sell natto and we make our pickles and, you know, the pickled plums, stuff like that. So yeah,
right.
People are picking up on it.
I hope that they discover more. I think you are really a kind of an ambassador for authentic Japanese home cooking. So, yeah.
I hope so, yeah.
Yes, you are.
Thank you.
So how are you coping with this the coronavirus pandemic situation?
It was great in the beginning because, you know, kids didn't have to go to school, so we cooked a lot at home. You know, and I love cooking for my kids, you know. They always give us good feedback, so that gives me an idea for the new dishes and stuff. So I experiment with my kids, and also you can't really underestimate kids' palate. You know, they tell you, like, straight up, you know, if they don't like something, and they tell you, so.
No sugarcoating.
No sugarcoating. They're brutally honest. So that was great in the beginning, but yeah, I don't know. I was planning to open the restaurant, and I had a place and everything, but you know, we decided it's not the good time to open it. So I'm not sure. But I guess, you know, lot more people are cooking at home now, so, you know, they come to our store and they ask us a lot of, you know, different questions, and I can always suggest them, you know, to use certain things and stuff. So that was a good part too. So a lot of good stuff came. You know, it's a different situation and a hard time, but
right.
So it wasn't too bad.
Right. So it seems that the relationship with food changed in terms of, you know, just go out or eat in. There's something in between they started to discover. Yeah, maybe you can start a cooking classes on Zoom or something like that, because I'm sure little people learn how to make them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Maybe you can organize that too.
Okay, I'll think about that.
Yeah.
What are your plans? You said you had a restaurant. So you're going to...
I don't know. I want to see, like, I want to wait, like, a couple more months, you know, what's going to be, like, to see what's going to be like. You know, some people say the end of March, situation will get better, but I don't know. So it's been more than 1 year, so I have no plans, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to open up the restaurant again, you know. So
right.
I missed all the commotion and I missed all the business. So,
Right. I asked this question because I think, you know, it would be nice if you expand the, you know, kind of routes to introduce this really healthy Japanese cooking to the world, New York world. Not just selling the finished items, but you can have cooked food in the middle of, you know, and a dining table. I mean, eventually everybody gets a vaccine. So it's not the far future, I hope. Yeah. And because dining out in New York City often get associated with, like, next day, oh, why did I eat too much last night? And I'm sure kind of dishes you make makes you healthy, like you get energized the next day. So... yeah, that's the value of Japanese home cooking.
Yeah, maybe 2022, maybe. But
Right. Yeah, let's hope. It's like one time, we don't have vaccines right now, enough of it, but we didn't have enough masks. Now it's masks are everywhere. So hopefully.
It was amazing how they recover from nothing to,
Right.
And I'm very hopeful too, so.
Right. Yeah, not to mention many toilet papers in stores.
That was scary.
Yeah. Right, for no reason. Mm-hmm. So where can we find your updates online and social media?
We have a website, but we don't update it much, so I've been really lazy. But we have an Instagram updating, not every day, but mostly weekly. So hashtag NeedJapanese, you know, you can find our Instagram, and our website is nijapanesedeli.com.
Okay, so nijapanesedeli.com, and need you say the Instagram, so ni
hashtag nijapanese.
Okay, so nijapanese. Yeah. All right. So, well, good luck, and thank you for being such a great ambassador of Japanese authentic, delicious, healthy home cooking.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So, listeners, if you have comments or questions about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradio.network or akikokatayama.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Aman Wang, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.